Well, I must say what a privilege it is to be able to bring the message on this special Sunday. I don't remember what it was like here 100 years ago. No big surprise. I don't really remember what it was like even a shorter time than that ago, because I'm not from here. And so you may be wondering, why on earth me, first of all, and you'll have to ask Chuck and Prince about that. And then, why did we talk about generosity? The sermon title is still generous. You'd think that in many ways we would simply talk about all that's happened, all that's gone on, all that will continue to go on as this church continues and the churches here continue to do what they do. Well, it's because generosity is what began this town, this community, these congregations, and it's what keeps them going. And that might sound a little bit odd. When we look at it, we think, well, you don't found a town for someone else. And no, I guess you don't. But you don't found a town if you don't care for those around you. One of the ongoing images I have of prairie towns going back to, well, whether it was 100 years ago or 50, 60, 70 years ago, as I talk to my relatives, as I talk to friends who were there, are these over and over and over again stories of generosity that were given without any thought of repayment to the people down the street, to those working the farm next over or further along. And when we think of what it was like 100 years ago, when we go back there in our imaginations, when there were very little social services, in this case very little I think is none, if you didn't take care of your neighbors and they of you, there was no hope. And I put it to you that a town that has no hope is a town that never, ever survives. Generosity brings hope. As we listen to the reading this morning, one of the things I found very interesting and always have is Paul sending this letter to the church at Corinth. The Corinthians were a rather fractious bunch in many ways. And if you read between the lines, and sometimes you don't even have to go between the lines, you can see that Paul has some very hard things to say to them. But he doesn't overlook all the good they do, and he talks about their generosity. And in the end of the first verse that was read out of this passage in Corinthians, it says, "See that you also excel in this grace of giving." And I want us to think about that for a second, that giving is a grace. Generosity is a grace. And let's remember that grace, as it's used in the Bible, is God's unmerited favor poured upon us. We are saved by grace, not because of anything we do, lest we become boastful, Paul reminds us in Ephesians. So what's interesting is that giving as a grace is first given to us. The first part of the grace of giving is for us to receive this gift. And then, and only then, giving, generosity, becomes a gift to others. Without knowing anything about this community, I could see the generosity in it by this building. Churches are not built by denominations. They're not built by wealthy investors. They're not built because somebody had a great dot-com startup. Churches are built because people want to worship together. People want to be together in a house that is devoted to the worship of God and the building up of His people. And so how does that happen? People give out of what they have. There's all kinds of stories of the first church in a community being put up out of whatever materials are at hand by volunteers doing the best they can. And obviously the best they can is pretty good, because you can still see some of those churches here and there. When we move away from just providing all the labor and move into this other sense of giving out of the financial resources we have, it's exactly the same. We give out of what we have to accomplish what God has asked us to do. God has asked people everywhere to find some way to get together. The writer of the book of Hebrews tells us all, don't abandon getting together with your sisters and brothers in the Lord. And when you first start and you're little, you can do that in the house, but eventually you outgrow that. And you build a church. Some churches look like this, which is a very church-like church. I really like it. Some churches, like the churches I grew up in, look an awful lot like a gymnasium. I'm not as fond of those, but they're still churches. And they're all built because people gave what they can and what they could. And that takes me to the second bit I'd like to remind us about when we think of still being generous. And that's in the middle of our reading, verses 10, 11, and 12. Paul reminds people, the church at Corinth, that they were the first to give. He's reminding them that they responded to this, to the grace of giving that was put upon them, and they responded in generosity. And he lets them know that there are still things to be done. And then verse 12, which I think is maybe the most critical verse in the Bible on giving, where Paul says, if the willingness is there, the gift is acceptable according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. In smaller communities, it's easy for churches, it's easy for the community itself, to spend all of our time thinking about what we don't have. If only we had more people. If only we had more money. If only we had more children coming. If only we had whatever it might be. Well, if you had that, you'd still be wondering about if only we had. I grew up in a church where a Sunday morning service, you could look out at 1,600 people. And I subsequently interned there as part of my studies for my undergraduate degree. And when I got on the inside, I kept still hearing, if only we had, you know, and you're thinking, if only we had what? The final sanctuary, we could pick up this building and plunk it inside and still have room for most of not, maybe even all of it. And they were still doing this if only. But we can always look at the if only. But the if onlys are completely out of our control. That's right up there with my children saying, if only I was taller or shorter or smaller or wider, whatever they happen to be most concerned about. I have 15-year-old twins. There's always something that's not quite right. The girls, even. If we look at the if only, nothing will ever happen. And if we look at what we have to provide to the community and to the congregation, and we look at it solely in light of the if only, we won't even bother giving what we can. How can you be willing to give anything if you look at it as inadequate compared to what you think we need? But if instead of looking at it that way, instead of saying, if only we had whatever it might be, if I look at what I have and say, Lord, I am willing to give what I can in the direction that you provide, and if I'm willing to do that, the gift is acceptable. Jesus pointed out to his disciples when the widow came and provided two small coins, whatever they are. Call it two pennies. And Jesus said, that woman gave an acceptable gift. She gave all she had. Are we all called to give all we have? No. Sometimes we are. But most of the time, we're called to give according to what we have. Proving once again that you can't plan the good things that might possibly show up in a sermon. This morning, Neela, who's my 5-year-old, was looking through her current bank. I say current bank because there's something about kids of that age. Just, they can't stand the thought of leaving money in one place. They keep moving it somewhere else. Or they put little bits of it here and there. I was telling Heather, all I'm waiting for now is, well, I've kept the pennies under this leaf, and you know, whatever it might be. So she found her current bank, which is a Ziploc bag filled with crayons and money. And she was looking through it because at her church school this morning, she needs to take something for the offering. And so she took out the money. It's not very much there. It's whatever she's picked up. It's certainly less than a dollar. But she's looking at it. She said, well, I know what I'm going to do with these silver ones. So I think I'm going to give the prince. And I said, when you're willing to give, whatever you give is what you should give. It's tempting for us in a small community, even with a wonderful history as this one has, but a small community, to look at the smallness of our resources instead of the willingness of us that can then be handed over to God, for whom small is never an option. Does that mean that any of the churches here will, over the next 3 or 4 years, become 500 or 600 or 700 people attending every Sunday? Probably not. Does it mean that as the members of these faith communities continue to give, as you're able and as you're willing, that God will continue to bless you? It absolutely does. One of the worst things we can do is live in the past or the future. We can look to the past when everything was better, because everything's always better in the past, because, well, it's past. You know, we don't forget it. You know. The snow was so much better when I was 10. Yeah, it was also higher than my head. Yeah, I don't want to shovel that now. That's a good memory, but that's it. If all we do is look at the past and say, we used to be able to do this, and now we can't, we're going to be demoralized. If we look into the future, which we honestly know nothing about, we can draw some possibilities, but we don't know the future. We don't know what's going to happen to us tomorrow, let alone a year or 10 years down the road. But if we spend all of our time saying, well, according to what I can see now, what I want will never happen, we'll be just as demoralized. But Paul finishes up this chapter, or this section in 2 Corinthians, with a reminder about taking up manna. And when the people of Israel were in the wilderness, and manna came so that they wouldn't die, they got as much as they needed. Those who gathered too little found they had enough, and those who gathered too much found what the extra they had gone bad. God provides enough. He did for them when it was a matter of life and death, and he does now. But God provides enough by God's measure, not mine, and not yours. We often think that we know what we need, and frequently we do, but we certainly don't always. And when we look at the past 100 years, because reviewing your history is a great thing to do, you just don't want to live there. You want to live where they have indoor plumbing. But we review our history and we look into the future with the confidence that comes of knowing that God, who began these works, will be faithful to carry them to completion. We don't know what completion looks like, but God does. And his faithfulness is what will carry them through. And in the same way, the people who started Briarcrest and who started any faith community here did so out of a spirit of generosity, out of doing what they could. So can we. Every morning, we can wake up and get ready to do what we can, because that's what we're asked to do. God never asks me to do things I simply cannot. My children ask me to do things I can't. Producing $10 bills out of the air is something they'd like me to be able to do more frequently. And I often want myself to do what I can't. That's not from God. In the same way that generosity began all of this, we are still generous. This small community has put on an opportunity to celebrate for, what, 6 times the population? That's generosity and hospitality and grace and all of those wonderful things. God's not asking you to do what you can't. He never has. He never will. But God asks you to maintain that same spirit of generosity that started everything we see around us, so that we might continue on into the next 100 years. Amen.